From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, here's the news for This Day in Maine, Thursday, July 7th, 2016. I'm Andrew Catalina, in for Barbara Crudy. And on this day, Maine's Attorney General has confirmed what Governor Paula Page said at a town hall meeting in Boothe Bay Harbor last night, that she intends to sue the administration for violating the state's open meetings law. And in part two of his series on money and the marijuana campaign, Steve Missler looks at the billion-dollar industry Maine could be harnessing. Those stories and more coming up. Attorney General Janet Mills has confirmed that she plans to file a complaint in state court over a closed meeting held by a special commission on education funding. But, as Mal Leary reports, it's an unusual step.
Lawmakers created the Blue Ribbon Commission to look at a number of issues affecting Maine's educational system. But at Governor Paula Page's insistence, the first meeting was held in private at the Blaine House. He characterized it as a chance for members to get to know each other. Members of the legislature's Education Committee, the Maine Education Association, the Maine School Management Association, and the news media were barred. But as a public body created by the legislature, meetings of the commission have to be open. And legislative leaders on both sides of the aisle objected to the closed meeting. Senate Minority Leader Justin Alfond, a Portland Democrat and member of the commission, vowed not to attend another meeting unless it was open. At his recent town meeting in Boothe Bay Harbor, Governor LePage announced Attorney General Janet Mills' plan to file a legal challenge to that closed meeting. LePage says it appears to him that Mills is bowing to pressure from House Speaker Mark Eaves, a political rival of the governor.
When it first happened, she said, oh, there's nothing here, I don't want to sue him. But the Speaker of the House, I'm told, and I'm repeating this, as I'm told, the Speaker of the House has been lobbying hard to sue the administration. It's a $500 fine. Give me a break.
LePage says the taxpayers will be on the losing end as they have to pay both the legal fees for the AG's office and the commission, as well as whatever fine might actually be assessed by the court. Eve says he simply sent a letter to Mills asking that the law be enforced.
We've been asking the Attorney General to enforce the laws that are on the books currently so that the public does have access to these meetings.
Mills has confirmed that she plans to file a complaint against the commission for holding the closed meeting, but declined to be interviewed on why she's taking action in this case. Portland attorney Sig Schutz, with Pretty Flaherty, often represents news media organizations in open meetings and public records cases. Schutz says he could not recall a single case in the past brought by any attorney general to enforce the open meetings law. He says most public bodies follow the law.
I think the overall incidence is rare, but it's exceptionally rare for the AG's office to get involved in this. I'm not aware of any prior instance where the Attorney General's office has pursued any kind of legal claim for violation of the public meetings law.
Schutz says he's pleased that the AG is taking the action. He says the closed commission meeting clearly violated the law. Mills, through her spokesman, says the complaint will detail the facts of the matter and will be self-explanatory. She did not say when it would be filed. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Governor Paula Page's former top lawyer gave advice that caused him to miss his opportunity to veto 65 bills. Documents released by LePage's office following a Freedom of Access Act request by the Associated Press reveal he'd been preparing to veto a slew of bills by their July 2015 deadlines until staffers changed course after an email from then-Chief Legal Counsel Cynthia Montgomery, who's now a state judge. In a June 29 email, Montgomery said a 1981 Maine Supreme Judicial Court ruling indicated LePage had more time to veto the bills. The court eventually concluded the governor goofed and the bills had become law over his objection. LePage has called Montgomery a fine attorney and defended her in the veto debacle, saying it was his mistake. A court spokeswoman hasn't responded to a request for comment. Republican U.S. Senator Susan Collins of Maine has introduced a bill designed to relieve some of the burden faced by those caring for loved ones with Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. Speaking on the Senate floor yesterday, Collins said that as the elder population of the U.S. burgeons, more families will face dementia and the considerable costs that come with it.
Last year, caregivers of people living with Alzheimer's shouldered $10.2 billion in health care costs related to the physical and emotional effects of caregiving.
Collins says caregivers often suffer from job and financial stress, depression, and their own health issues while trying to care for a needy spouse or parent. She says the bill aims to expand training and support programs for caregivers so that more dementia patients can stay home longer.
It would help us do more to care for our caregivers.
Collins says 5.4 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's. Maine, often cited as the oldest state in the union, has more than 37,000 people living with Alzheimer's. Those figures are expected to grow rapidly as baby boomers enter their elder years. One of the oldest private schools in the nation is receiving a major gift to support diversity and the arts. Officials from Hebron Academy say the $10 million grant from benefactor Albert LePage is the largest in its 212-year history.
We're incredibly grateful that he's done so much to secure the foundation and future of Hebron Academy.
John King retired a week ago after 15 years as head of Hebron Academy. King says LePage, who hails from the Lewiston, Auburn area, is the retired co-chair of LePage Bakeries. He says some of LePage's $10 million gift will be used to finish a new arts center.
To improve the auditorium seating for the theater, and most importantly, to create music practice, ensemble, rehearsal spaces, and classrooms.
But a bigger portion of the gift, King says, will go to support diversity programs, the hiring and retention of minority faculty, and more scholarships to help families of all socioeconomic backgrounds attend the school, where tuition is in excess of $59,000 per year. Wellness Connection of Maine, the state's largest medical marijuana dispensary group, has announced that it's relocating its Thomaston dispensary to downtown Bath. CEO Patricia Rossi says the final move will take place sometime in August. All 1,000 patients in Thomaston will have the option of transferring their memberships to Bath or to the group's Gardner location.
The reason that is driving this move is this will allow us to serve patients more effectively, more efficiently, and while offering them more space and privacy than our current location can offer.
Rossi says there's a strong demand for medical marijuana in Maine's mid-coast, and she expects the number of patients could double in the next year. But she says the move is bittersweet because Thomaston has been a receptive community for the dispensary since it opened in 2011.
It's also a little bittersweet because we realize that our relocation to Bath, while it will make us be more accessible to many, it will also make it more challenging for some to access their marijuana.
Because of that challenge, Wellness Connection will explore a delivery service for patients who can't make the trip. Wellness Connection operates 4 dispensaries and 1 cultivation facility in Maine, serving more than 12,000 patients. And moving from medical to recreational marijuana, as the campaign to legalize recreational use heats up in Maine, voters can expect pro-pot advocates to talk a lot about outdated laws that criminalize the use and possession of the drug. But in the background is a burgeoning billion-dollar cannabis industry that some experts believe is poised to explode as states march toward legalization. In part two of our report on the money behind the marijuana campaign, Steve Missler finds that Maine is on the leading edge of this movement.
Meet Regina. She's the host of a series of videos that sell the qualities of a growing offering of consumer products. In this case, a variety called OG Kush.
If you are a fan of cabin getaways amongst a forest of evergreens, expect OG Kush to take you there with its signature earthy pine scent with woody undertones.
Sounds like she's talking about wine, but it's actually a strain of marijuana. The visual presentation includes close-ups of crystal-covered buds, a woody, clean set for Regina, and Leafly, the company that produces these videos, as well as the app that helps users find and rate the pot, tops it all off by depicting the different pot strains as if they're part of the periodic table. OG is shown as OGK, White Widow is WW. Leafly and its parent company, Privateer Holdings, are hoping to cash in on a fledgling legal pot industry that was valued at $7 billion this year by New Frontier, a DC-based industry analyst. That's billion with a B. New Frontier's VP for Industry Analytics, John Kajia, projects the industry will explode as states like Maine consider knocking down weed prohibition laws to the tune of $220 billion by 2020.
There's an enormous amount of innovation that then can happen, which has been largely restrained by the fact that consumption and cultivation of the plant has been illegal.
Kajia says states that allow recreational adult use of marijuana are still in conflict with federal prohibition on the cultivation and consumption of the plant. That's made it difficult for legal sellers to even set up bank accounts, never mind find companies that will provide business services like point-of-sale software, inventory monitoring, you name it. But that's changing.
Today, for the first time ever, a major investment firm will put its money behind marijuana. It's a move they say will open the floodgates for more investments.
The story on CBS Morning News last year announced that Founders Fund, a big-time Silicon Valley investment firm, was putting $75 million into Privateer Holdings. That's the same company that owns Leafly, which is basically the pot user equivalent to Yelp, the app that helps people find bars and restaurants. Privateer also owns Tilray, a Canadian company that grows marijuana, and Marley Natural, created by the family of reggae star Bob Marley. Founders Fund was an early investor in Facebook, Spotify, and Elon Musk's SpaceX. Peter Thiel, a principal partner with Founders Fund, has been in the news lately because he's bankrolling Hulk Hogan's lawsuit against gossip website Gawker. And Sean Parker, the former president of Facebook and former partner at Founders Fund, is also a major contributor to New Approach, the political action committee helping to fund pro-legalization ballot initiatives in Maine and other states. Privateer Holdings has also contributed to New Approach, although not since 2014. Kajia says the Founders Fund investment was significant.
It signaled to a lot of people who had been sitting on the sidelines that there are some very serious players who are paying attention to this industry and who are seeing investment opportunities that rise to the level of $75 million.
There's still reluctance by some on Wall Street to get involved in the legal marijuana industry, but other investors are emerging. In June, Microsoft announced it was partnering with Kind, a Los Angeles startup that offers products for the industry, including ATM-style kiosks that help complete pot transactions. Other companies are ready. One, M. Jardin, offers turnkey consulting services, including growing software, material procurement, even help to hire temp workers for cultivation. Meanwhile, companies like Leafly, which operates as a social network like Facebook, are gathering consumer preference data that will ultimately help inform sellers of the most popular strains.
Well, it's going to allow a lot of the smaller farmers in the state to be able to have access to a larger market because currently they're limited under the medical marijuana system.
Paul McCarrier of Legalize Maine believes existing pot growers will benefit from the legalization.
It's going to allow a lot more people to invest in this local industry, and then that is going to be able to create hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs all across the state.
McCarrier says Maine farmers could also benefit from possible new investment by medical groups exploring the health benefits of the drug. New Frontier's John Kajia says the state's high rate of illicit use also signals high demand and, therefore, a growth opportunity. And while Maine's small population means that growth could have a ceiling, Kajia says the state could follow the lead of Colorado and cash in on cannabis tourism. So, stoned leaf peepers? Sure, Kajiya says.
It kind of adds to the experience of being there, even though the principal purpose for coming is to see the leagues.
But despite predictions of a windfall in tax revenues and an opportunity to join an emerging industry, there are some who believe that legalization supporters are high on optimism. That includes Governor Paul LePage.
It's hard to collect taxes on things you can grow in the backyard. You have a row of carrots, row of cucumbers, row of lettuce, and a row of marijuana.
Mainers will decide to join the four other states piloting the legal pot industry when they go to the polls in November. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And that's the news on This Day in Maine, Thursday, July 7th, 2016. Our theme music was composed by Robert Holt. Thanks to our news leaders Keith Shortall and Susan Sharon, and to Mal Leary, Steve Missler, and Jennifer Mitchell for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes or email us at tdim@mpbn.net. I'm Andrew Catalina. For all of us here at Maine Public Broadcasting, thanks for listening.